I am Gillian Strain, and welcome to the Go Health Podcast. The Go Health Podcast is run by the team here at the Guild of Health and St. Raphael, which is a charity that's been around for over 100 years, promoting and resourcing the healing ministry of the Christian faith. So we are in season 3 of the Go Health Podcast, and in this season we're exploring the topic Together We Flourish. We're looking at all the positive ways that people combine health and faith, and we have a fantastic lineup of even more really interesting people. And we've chosen this topic, Together We Flourish, as it is at the heart of the Go Health community and indeed all the work of the Guild. Our vision is to see flourishing communities made up of flourishing individuals, and the Go Health community, which is our membership community, is a place, the place for nurture, sharing, learning and practice, where we all actively tend to our own journey towards health and well-being with the faith of Jesus Christ at the centre. In this episode, we are exploring the theme of Together We Flourish with Alex Strangways Booth. Now, Alex is a highly experienced reporter and producer in TV and radio with a long career with the BBC. Most recently, she's been producing content for all 39 BBC local radio stations, including the Sunday Service, where she aims to bring unheard voices onto the airways, giving insight into what diverse Christian worship looks like. Alex is also a cancer survivor, a runner, and recently has been on a journey with the 1 year no beer organization, giving up alcohol in her health journey. So Alex is fantastic. She's really positive, a really interesting and engaging human being. And I was delighted that she gave us some of her time to chat on the podcast. I think we had a great conversation, opening into some interesting themes and insights about how to live a faith-filled, flourishing life. One open to what happens, with a real curiosity. I think that word's really stayed with me, thinking back on my conversation with Alex, curiosity about using real life to find God and to be positive. I hope that you enjoy this episode. It's a lovely boost in January, in cold, dark, wintry January. It's a great boost, some great food for thought, perhaps if you are like me, setting a few resolutions for the year ahead. So here we go, on with the episode. So Alex, welcome to the Go Health Podcast. How are you today?
Yeah, doing very well, fitting well. Yep, raring to go.
Good. Well, that's great, because we're at the beginning of season 3 and our topic, our kind of theme for the whole season is flourishing together. Together we flourish. It's our theme for the Go Health community. It's about community. It's about connection with others. And it's this season about really getting into the positive aspects of how faith and health come together. And you're one of the first people in my mind when I thought, who do we need to get on this podcast to tell us about this? Because you've been a really inspiring person in your work and in some of your postings on social media and things to me. So tell us about yourself. Tell us, what's your day job, Alex, and what's your background?
Well, my day job is a producer at the BBC. I'm a producer, but my specialism is religious affairs. So I do faith stories for all the 39 local radio stations around the country. So that's, I work for BBC local. And I've done that for quite a long time, about 10 years I've been doing this. But I've worked for the BBC for 26 years. Yesterday, couldn't even believe it. I know. I'm a rarity, I think. So I started working in local radio. I did the Sunday breakfast show at Radio Cleveland 25 years ago. That's Radio Tees now. So actually, I started doing faith stuff almost straight away, but I'm a general news journalist. I like my background. So for most of my career, I've been doing general news stories for local radio.
And the faith angle on that, do you have a background in theology or faith, or why that angle on journalism?
It's easy to tell looking back, isn't it? So I come from a mixed faith background. So my dad is Christian and my mom is Jewish. And actually, they both practice their faiths. So my mom is South African and my dad is English. And we lived in South Africa till I was seven. And then we came over here. And my mom had sort of been really thrown out of the Orthodox Jewish faith for marrying my dad. I mean, it was the 60s and those things were kind of quite clear cut at that time. But there was a big movement for Reform Judaism in this country when we arrived here. And my mom realized that it was okay to be Jewish if you were married to a non-Jew. And she's quite a powerful personality. So we were very much brought up Jewish. But at the same time, I'm very comfortable with Christianity because I was a guide and I went to a Church of England school. So for me, I don't think there was ever any tension between the fact that these were different faiths. I sort of, for me, they sat quite comfortably together in my life. But I think as a result, I've always had a real interest. And then when I grew up, I realized that it was probably a little bit strange and unusual. I mean, even my parents are in their 80s now and they're still practicing their own faiths. My dad's on the parish council, you know, my mom belongs to the liberal synagogue. So it's, I think I've always been really interested in faith communities and how they work and how they work in this country, because we don't realize it, but we're quite unusual in this country. Multi-faith, very tolerant and welcoming attitude to faith that doesn't necessarily exist elsewhere in the world.
And do you see that with your job with the BBC? You're in charge of the Sunday programmes, aren't you? And how do you put that together? And how do you sort of switch on a radar to find out, because to tap into what's going on in the country in terms of faith and community and what local stations might be interested to listen to?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, I produce content for them. I hesitate to say I'm in charge because it's slightly promoting me, but I produce content. So every local radio station has a Sunday faith programme. It's a 3-hour programme on a Sunday morning, and its remit is to tell stories about faith communities. The resources are very tight in local radio, especially now. And Sunday Breakfast doesn't have the biggest audience of the week, and we allocate resources kind of according to where our listeners are. So what happens is I produce a kind of a backbone, if you like, of content for them. I produce about 7 stories every week, which they use in amongst the local content that they can set up. It enables them to focus their attention on the best of their local stories rather than having to set up loads and loads and loads of stuff to fill a 3-hour program. You know, I tend to look at the stories of the week through a faith lens. So, you know, politics, COVID, cost of living, faith does not exist in a separate box from the rest of life. Faith influences people's decision making and their attitudes and their connections. And that's what I try and do. I try and find people with really strong stories to tell about how their faith has helped them make a difference in their community, for example. So I'm not bound by having to tell big stories about church politics, for example. I tend to like, let's not do church politics. I'll tell you what. And I don't have to do international stories. My focus is England. So I just look at the week's news and see what people are talking about and if there's a faith angle that I can put on that. You know, if there is an obvious massive faith story, I will do that. So how do I don't know. I talk to people. I get a lot of emails from people. I try really hard not to do kind of days and months because I think you can fall into it, you know, like apart from Black History Month, which I think is quite an interesting chance for me to talk to a lot of people I don't necessarily talk to. But I tend to avoid like National Poetry Day or Dyslexia Day or, you know, because I think that I can get a bit lazy as a journalist if I start doing that. And I try and avoid too many authors. Because like you can also like fill a whole program talking to people who've written books. So I try and always talk to people at the heart of the story as well, if I can. So not too many experts, bods, bishops, etc.
Do you have a sense that some stories really resonate with the public? And is that different from the ones that might resonate to local BBC broadcaster, you know, the journalists as well?
Well, we have to be very clear about our audience on local radio. All the bits of the BBC that get the big headlines, our audience kind of aren't really listening or watching. The cost of living is so important to people at the moment. So we do a lot of that, but we try and do it in a helpful and positive way, shouting political way. The BBC local radio have just done an amazing thing called the Make a Difference Awards, which have gone right across the whole of BBC local radio, where they've people have nominated local people who've done amazing things in the last few years, who run charities or just do stuff in their community. And we had like a big awards ceremony, and it gave us a chance to actually talk to people about those stories. So I find that the audience, well, I like it. So, and the audience like it. They like to hear stories about people who are, who've overcome something or, you know, made their community better in some way. I think you would probably hear more positivity on local radio than you might hear elsewhere on the BBC. You know, we love a bit of Strictly. Who doesn't? It's not light and fluffy, but it's kind of, when you get a really strong personal story, people just stop and listen, you know, and those are the ones that resonate the most.
And talking about personal stories and difficult times, you've been on a journey yourself, haven't you, Alex, through illness and fitness and health, about your diagnosis?
Do you know, it probably even starts before my diagnosis, because I was leading quite an unhealthy life, because sometimes that happens to you in the media. I had two small children and a full-time job, and I was traveling. So actually I was going to Rome a lot at some point and doing Pope stuff. And I was kind of really in the depths of this journalistic career, and I was really overweight. And I'd struggled a lot with depression after having both my children, actually. So actually, after I had my son, who's now 17, I did start to look a little bit more at my health and my well-being. I was on antidepressants and I didn't want to be. So I was starting to look at alternatives to being on antidepressants when I did the mindfulness course, because it put me much more in touch with my own body and my own feelings and where I was at. And I was really unhappy with my weight. I mean, I've always been unhappy with my weight, but that's a whole nother story. I started to get much fitter, but about a year after I started to work out a little bit more and look at what I was eating, I and this was in Rome, actually, I started to get this real discomfort in my bladder. Like I would suddenly need to go to the loo, like out of nowhere for no reason. And it was really weird. And I sort of ignored it for a bit. And then I thought, well, actually, I'm actually quite healthy and I'm not stressed and it isn't a bladder infection and stuff. And I went to my GP and I said, there's something wrong, but I don't know what it is. And bless her heart, she sent me for a scan almost straight away. I mean, I'm so grateful to my GP. So I went for a scan, and the radiographer actually said to me, she said, I don't normally do this, but you need to go back to your GP now because there's something in your bladder. And I had this tumor. I had bladder cancer. I mean, I was 40, I think, or maybe 41. Well, I was in my early 40s, which is really unusual. I mean, and bladder cancer. I mean, like, it was like me and a bunch of old fellas in the waiting room, because it generally happens later in life. And I think, I don't know if men get it more than women, but anyway, that's what it always looked like to me.
Never heard of anyone having bladder cancer before.
You know, I count myself as being really lucky because it was diagnosed so well, and then it was dealt with really quickly, and I had the tumor taken out, and I had a little bit of chemo, and you don't have to have much for bladder cancer. I mean, I really count myself lucky because I didn't have to have chemotherapy over a long period of time. I wasn't scared. I was really philosophical about it. I just felt like I was going to get through it and it was okay. And I started to, I had the tools in place already and I just needed to build on them. And I think that after my bladder cancer, I put my health and well-being right in the center of my life. I thought that if you put your health and well-being, I think of it as a circle, and your health and well-being sits right in the middle, and then everything else can work around the edges. And for my whole life, I had been putting my work in the middle, and then my family, and then my health and well-being. And it just all shifted and became health and well-being, family, work. And when I look back, that is the shift that I made.
Mm. And when you said you were diagnosed and that you had the tools already, is that what you mean? You had sort of the insight to know how to make the changes at that point in order to support you?
Yeah, I think I did, actually. And the program that I joined was, I mean, I have to give credit. So it started with my house, because my house was chaotic. And I found Fly Lady, who helps you tidy your house, right? And I love Fly Lady and I still do Fly Lady stuff. But she introduced me to an American trainer called Jonathan Roach, who is a fitness trainer coach. And he did an online program before anyone did online programs. I mean, everyone does fitness online now, don't they? And he did half hour workouts. He introduced me to interval training, which is also called HIIT, I guess, and strength training, and his whole philosophy about listening to positive content and listening to your positive voice every day and, you know, drinking lots of water and eating well. And I credit Jonathan, who has a thing called No Excuses, with a lot of for introducing me to coaching, even for introducing me to a concept where you could set a goal and work towards it. Like, I didn't really even operate like that. I sort of drifted through my life, sort of doing what I had to do. And, you know, and what I started to do was I started to set goals every year. And sometimes I'd reset them through the year. And I was like, I'm going to make a half hour radio documentary. And I did, you know, and then you're like, oh, look, if you set a goal and like take steps towards it, you can actually achieve all sorts of things. So I think that, I stayed with Jonathan. I'm still with him now. I think coaching is fantastic. I think that sometimes you can't do it by yourself and you need help. So I'm a big fan of coaching. So yeah, I had the tools and I had the mindfulness, you know, so yeah.
So it feels like, that's sort of a huge journey, right? From unexpected cancer diagnosis with an unusual cancer. It feels like a condensed version of it sounds like a very long and intense and important well-being journey. And I just wondered, you haven't used the word spirituality at all. Is that a word you're comfortable with? Is that part of what was going on there with your really impressive tooling up, right? I've got a problem. I need to shift my life and get into the coaching side of it and the goal stuff. What about the other stuff around spirituality or soul or however you're comfortable talking about that?
Yes, I think spirituality is really important. I don't talk about it very much because I'm so used to being sort of objective about my faith. But I did go back to synagogue, actually. So I joined the liberal synagogue near my home. And I just went back myself because I often say to people, I have quite a Christian attitude to Judaism because a lot of Jewish communities in this country, a lot of people are culturally Jewish. And I come across it quite a lot in my work where people, Jewish culture is very strong and it runs strong through all our families. But I was looking for the spirituality in Judaism, if you like. I wanted to go and really engage with who is God and what does he look like in my life? And liberal Judaism is fantastic because obviously it's completely equal. The rabbi was a woman. We engage very closely with the Torah, which people might not do in women don't historically do in Orthodox Judaism. The rabbi was amazing. I went to Hebrew classes. I had a bat mitzvah when I was 13. Back in the 80s with the wonderful Rabbi Jonathan Romain, who is also a big, you know, he's been an influence in my life and still is actually to this day. Funny, I always laugh because he's quite a big broadcaster. I do laugh because he comes on the radio and stuff and he's known me since I was 9. So I think, you know, I redid my bat mitzvah when I was 40. And then I started to lead services at the synagogue and I get like a real, I mean, it's such a privilege apart from anything to lead a service. And I really love to give people just that space. I think I think it's so important. We need that space every week to like hold a space where we can just connect with something outside ourselves. You know, I mean, you know, pray. And I say that to people. It's like, no, I need a good pray. I'm going to synagogue today because I just have to pray. So what's interesting to me is like, I don't, you know, my children have both had bar and bat mitzvahs. They interestingly have drifted away in their teens, but I don't really like, that's not important to me because I do believe that spirituality is a personal choice. Like that's a very British attitude. I think, you know, I'm very comfortable where people find that space and that peace to pray. I think you can find it in a tradition that you're comfortable with. So yes, actually it did. I mean, sorry, just to say, so now that you mention it, I suppose it did run parallel to my health and well-being journey when I went back to synagogue for myself, you know, for my own journey.
And it's interesting because in the Old Testament or the Torah, that's hugely influenced a Christian understanding of health and healing, in that we're, especially in the Genesis creation narratives, that we are created in a holistic fashion. We're not just sort of bodies with a battery stuck in, and that's your soul, and that's the important bit, never mind the bodies. But we have a very earthy beginning according to the creation narratives, that we are created as people with bodies and spirits sort of intertangled together, and then also created with to be in community, you know, with another in a garden and with God in Eden. These strong Jewish understandings of what it is to be human have massively influenced the Christian understanding of what to be human, obviously, as well.
Yes, and connection, you know, connection is so important, isn't it? I think it's really interesting that you mentioned connection, because I think that, you know, that's what I found through the synagogue, but I could have found it through a church, or, you know, where, you know, it's the sense of community. Like, I value it really highly that I belong to this community. There are people there who will help each other. We journey together. We hang out together. We have meals together. And I think that, you know, in a world where we're increasingly losing connection with other human beings, you know, it's been shown to be one of the most important parts of health and well-being, that connection with other people in a community.
Absolutely. I mean, they've measured the positive immune system impact of doing stuff like we might do in synagogue or church, you know, getting together, doing stuff together. Almost doesn't matter what it is. You get this great like boost of happy hormones or immune system boost as well. And this, I think this word connection is really important, because it also suggests that previous to whatever happened to begin that journey, there was a disconnection from our bodies, perhaps, or true purpose as well. So when talking about healing, the word connection comes up all the time. And we've seen it as well in the response of faith communities in the pandemic. There's a great report came out, you know, the Keeping the Faith report, which I'd almost, you know, you could almost write a parody of it, really, because it was commissioned by Stephen Timms MP, go and ask local councils their experience of working with faith groups during the pandemic. And the report is a huge report, very technical. And it goes, oh, we found them to be very well connected, and they're very responsive, and they've got these huge networks and communities, and they just got all these volunteers that can do stuff. So if you're in any kind of faith community, you're like, yeah, we know. We know that's us. Like, you just discovered this is what we do, and it can make a massive impact on health. But you're right. I think connection is so vital as well, because there's something about the way we've constructed modern society that disconnects us in all lots of different ways. Like all these little wires getting pulled out of circuits, we disconnect from the power source, don't we?
For sure, absolutely. Yeah. It's vital. I can rant on some more about connection.
So tell us, because you've been part of other communities as well, haven't you? With 1 year no beer, and how did you find that? And about your connection with alcohol and things like that, and how this has improved your health?
Well, I would say that for the thing about being on a health and well-being journey and being fit is that, you know, you begin to realize that drinking alcohol kind of gets in the way. I would get very bad hangovers. I mean, actually, when I look back, because I've now been alcohol-free for nearly 3 years. So I've not had any alcohol for 3 years, nearly 3 years. About 5 years ago, so I'm 3 years in, I would say I tried so hard. I was moderating. I will have one. I'll only have one. Tonight, I'll only have one drink, and then I'll have a glass of water between each drink. And I was a big drinker. Like, I was a big drinker. There is no doubt that in my adult life, alcohol played a big part in my socializing. My socializing was all around alcohol. I didn't tend to drink during the week, but when I drank a lot. And I would sometimes black out and not remember things. You know, I would get sick. And it suddenly started to dawn on me that this is not good. This is not how I should be living. And I tried all sorts of things to cut down. And it doesn't work, because alcohol is addictive. I mean, really, the really simple fact of the matter here is alcohol is addictive. And when you have a drink, you want to have another drink. That's just how alcohol works. I kept thinking, I want to give up. So I wanted to give up drinking so much. But it was completely countercultural. Like, I don't know anyone who doesn't drink in my real life, apart from my friends who come from Muslim communities or the Salvation Army. So I always kind of thought it was like a religious thing not to drink. So and observant Sikhs. I wanted it so badly, and I kept seeing. And you know how I must have done searches. How do I, you know, so Facebook kept throwing things up, and it threw up 1 year no beer quite a lot, which was an organization that was started by this guy, Andy Ramage, and his friend, Rory Fairburns. And they just did it because Andy had given up alcohol. He's completely evangelical about it. So I joined 1 year no beer. I thought, yeah, I'll do it. I'll give up drinking for a year and I'll see what it's like. And having decided to do it, I did it for December 2019. I gave up drinking in December because I thought I'll give it a go in December. It's my birthday. It's Christmas. It's all those big things. And I really enjoyed it. I had a lovely December. I felt fine. It's a really stressful month normally. It wasn't as stressful. Go figure. So I had my last drink on New Year's Eve. And actually, I was just like, oh, I kind of don't want it. And then I gave up. And through 1 year no beer, I joined. There's a big Facebook community. It's kind of too big. That's like connection on a difficult scale. But they did a coaching program within 1 year no beer, which they called the 1 year no beer mastermind. And it was a 6-week coaching course with a smaller group of people where we met every week on Zoom. And we did a lot of like James Clear's Atomic Habits. And, you know, we looked at kind of, it was, you know, identifying, we did a lot of those kind of we did a 16 personality surveys, lots of coaching techniques I am learning now. I didn't realize at the time. And that group of people, so it's COVID. So we're in the pandemic, like we're not going to bring all these people all over the world and we're all in lockdown. So we would meet every week on Zoom and we still meet. It's like 3 years. I mean, it's like over 2 years later, that group of people are such good friends to me and I value them so much. And like one of our number was in Kyiv. So we like followed his whole crazy time through the war. And, you know, it's just been an amazing time. And, you know, I think giving up alcohol is still countercultural. And I still get given a bit of a hard time by some people about it because they don't understand why I'm doing it. And, you know, people, which is odd, because like if you'd given up like cocaine or something, no one would give you a hard time. It's so strange. Just have one.
Why do you think people do that? And how do you cope with that?
I think people do it because alcohol is absolutely ingrained in our culture, tangled around the DNA of our existence. I think I've heard people say, I don't trust people who don't drink, which is a really odd thing to say. I may have said it myself in the past. You know, oh God, you're no fun. I think my social life has probably changed and maybe dwindled a little bit. And I'm less inclined to go to parties unless there's really good food. So I think, how do I cope with it? I do talk about it. So some people just kind of don't talk about it or say they're on medication or something. I want to talk about it because it's been a really interesting journey. So I tell people I don't drink and I don't know. We all wrestle with it in the alcohol-free space. We all wrestle with the fact that in British culture, it's regarded as deeply suspicious if you don't drink. I struggle with it, Gillian. I struggle with it. I don't know why. I'm so much happier for not drinking. I'm just happier. I'm never anxious, really. I'm having a very stressful time at the moment. My mom is very unwell. You know, I couldn't be doing it if I was waking up laggy with a bit of a hangover. I couldn't cope with the roller coaster of emotions, really. So yeah, and you know, it's just made me, I'm fitter than I've ever been. I'm really fit.
So you've just completed your first half marathon. Tell us about that moment where you crossed the finish line.
Oh my gosh. I have never been happier in my whole life than when I saw that finish line. I was practically on my knees. But what was interesting, well, where do I start? With the running, I actually did a 10K in 2018. So this is like before the giving up alcohol. So I'd already started to toy with this idea of running. It was, you know, and it was great. I really enjoyed it. But in just at the end of last year, a local gym opened, a little gym opened near me, small group training gym. And I thought, I need to like take my fitness to another level. So I joined this small group training and it's local. And again, it's connections, Gillian, because I know because the people are all local. It's lovely. I feel like it's a little bit of my community that I, you know, I see them in the street and walking the dogs and stuff. It's really nice. So he's really tough, Paul, our trainer. He's like ex-military. He's like full on. I have never worked out like that before in my life. There's a lot of running up and down the road and carrying kettlebells and things, you know, swinging them, lots of kettlebell swings, and lots of endurance training. And obviously he's done ultra marathons and he's very keen on the whole running thing. So I said to him, oh, you know, I quite like to start running again and maybe I'll do a 10K. And he said to me, why don't you do a half marathon? Okay. So he's been, so it helped that, again, you know, big fan of coaching. Paul has been a really good person to do that training with. One of the other women at the gym, trained, we decided to do it together. She decided to do it too. And Paul said, why don't you run together? So it was the first time I'd run with someone else. So much fun, like running on the downs on Saturday mornings, building up our mileage, like, you know, the feeling of doing 8 miles, then 9, then 10, you know, then we did 12, you know, like, wow. You know, I love the feeling when you get in the flow of running. It's like, it's a fairly unbeatable feeling. And like, I'm 50 and I'm not an athlete. Like, there is no athleticism in my past. So a lot of people were like, yeah, I used to run at school, or, you know, I used to do this. Like, that does not me. So the half marathon was in Sussex, and it was a beautiful day, and I was absolutely on it. I think Nina's an amazing companion. She stayed the whole way around with me. I think she could have done it faster than me, to be fair to her. The last mile, I just found it so hard. And Paul was there. He came down to the last mile and he said to me, Alex, you looked defeated. He said to me, your body bowed forward. And I thought back and I thought, gosh, he's right. And he said, all you need to do is stand up straight and run straight. And because he's very big on the whole, it's a mental game. Like, this is not a physical game. It's a mental game. I loved it. But the last 2 miles really was just so difficult. But next time I will stand straight. But it's a metaphor for life, isn't it? It's so easy to just, you know, let it defeat you. And you just got to stand tall. Walk tall.
I think it's right. I think so much of it's in our heads as well. And that's around almost anything we want to achieve, not just any kind of physical sports as well. It's about how you deal with problems. I found that starting with having kids and having to parent them through when they're babies, you don't think it's easy, but it is, because you just got to feed them and keep them alive. And then they get bigger and they've got to go out into a big, bad world. And you're responsible for welcoming them home and making things okay in the end. And as through parenting, I've sort of, you know, it's helped me solidify kind of thinking around resilience and bouncing back from problems, and how problems are actually just an opportunity to learn more, ask more questions, be better next time, and doing all that while keeping something at your core that keeps you aware of your own value. It's sort of a balance, isn't it? About seeing problems as challenges, but keeping your own value at the center, which is so important.
Yeah, it's really important to know what your own values are. And I mean, I don't talk much about my children, but obviously I have brought up 2 children. That's been quite a big part of the last 20 years of my life. My daughter's 21 next week. So I think, you know, you have to know what your values are. And I recommend getting a notepad out and writing them down, because, you know, sometimes we just don't think about our values and what they are. But when you see them written down, it's really powerful. And then it helps you make decisions about what you're going to do in any given set of circumstances. So, you know, when you do have a difficult decision to make, you make it according to your values, because you cannot live a happy and productive life if you're going against your own values.
And so what's next with your running?
Well, now then, it's nearly 2 weeks since the half marathon. I look at a marathon, the half marathon was so hard. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with my running, but I need to do something, because what I thought was I might try and get a bit faster. And there's a guy who does like some training, according to my trainer, Paul. And I think what I'd like to do is, because I have very self-limiting beliefs. I think I'm slow, but I don't think I necessarily am. So I would like to explore that, I think, and then see, and then maybe do another half, and then see what happens. But I'm going to keep my running twice a week for sure. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Do you think it's important for your mental health as well as physical health?
Absolutely. I think all exercise, you know, you don't have to run. You can walk, or, you know, just do half hour workouts every day. I think it's vital. I think my mental health would not be good without exercise. I think with the running, it's just so it gives you more of a mental boost than doing a workout in a gym, because you can hardly believe you're doing it, you know, and you get home after 6 miles and you're like, yeah, I ran 6 miles before breakfast. Now what? So I think it's a huge mental boost once you start running.
Do you consider a spiritual activity running?
I think I probably do, actually. Yeah, I think that my preference is to run in the countryside. And I like running on the downs, you know, because I feel, I just feel that it can, I think connection with nature is so, oh, it sounds so cheesy, doesn't it, when people say that? But I think
it does, but it's true. So you can be cheesy. It's okay.
Okay. I think when you get out and into the green and the blue and the clouds and the wheat in the fields and the, you know, I think it's just a reminder of how blessed we actually are. Mm. I think it helps your brain expand because you're not in the streets and you're not in your house and it's almost as if your eyesight widens. You know, when I first went on antidepressants, I had this really weird experience where I felt like I could see out of the corners of my eyes. It was really, really surreal. And I'm quite a big fan of antidepressants actually, because I do think they help fix me. But I think that's how I feel when I'm out in nature. I just feel as if my whole vision expands and I can see more of the world and feel more of the world. So yeah, I think it is spiritual.
It's interesting, isn't it? I have the same, I'm not very well at the moment. I'm just getting over COVID. And I had the same experience when not running, but actually going to Choral Evensong the other day, because I'd been stuck in my house all day. I was worried about work, then worried about the washing, you know, that kind of universe I was living in. And then I'm lucky to live next to a cathedral. I went to Choral Evensong and I just like, I'm surrounded by thousands of years of history of people being stressed about their washing and their work, and it's all going to be okay. And it just sort of lifts your eyes up above what you're doing, and connects you into the story of our faiths, or the story of our history, our place, and connection with other people, because we don't worship alone in churches.
And yesterday, I mean, yesterday was Yom Kippur, which is a Jewish Day of Atonement. And my mom's not very mobile, so we, you know, thank goodness for Zoom. We were just saying that, can you imagine? Like all the services were on Zoom, and you know, it's such a powerful day. You know, you're supposed to fast. I didn't fast totally because I didn't want my mom to fast. And you know, it's a powerful thing to sit for a day and, you know, think about death and think about life and think about, you know, to pray all day is just like, I love Day of Atonement, you know, because when do you get to do that? Just to pray all day and not worry about, as you say, not worry about the washing or food or anything. You know, it's a very powerful and restorative, and I feel great today. I can feel that extra energy from the day. So yeah, it's amazing.
It does also sound countercultural, a day of thinking about death, you know, and it doesn't sound like the most energizing thing, but it is, because it's the elephant in the room, isn't it? We have in this Christian tradition, doesn't quite carry over, but yeah, if you think about All Souls, All Saints at the end of November, that kind of period in our lives, both in autumn in the Western Hemisphere as well, it is really important, because, you know, it doesn't matter if you're in the gym or buying a health magazine or at Holland and Barrett buying some more supplements, you know, actually the thing our faith can do is help us understand death, and that's in that, and that can help us to flourish in life. It is weird, but it's true. We've got thousands of years of history to show that, haven't we?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's always been in my life. Like it's something that I've always, you know, I've always done Yom Kippur, so it's the day where you descend to the gates, you know, you descend into death. It's the structure of the day is that you descend, and then the last service is the memorial service, and then literally the dawn is coming. I mean, that's the language is all like that. You know, evening has come. You know, the doors are opening. We're emerging back into life. And I think it's always been very powerful to me that you can do that in a day.
And emerging back into life. So what's next for you? You mentioned coaching quite a few times. Is this something you're exploring in terms of your own well-being and flourishing?
Yes, I love coaching. So I'm actually doing a diploma in positive coaching, which is using positive psychology, you know, which is a great strand of psychology and one that I feel very comfortable with. So I'm actually doing it with Andy Ramage, who founded One Year No Beer, who's got a coaching company now. And I just absolutely love it. So I decided at age 50 that what I want to do now is I want to help. It came to me in a sort of flash. I want to help people. I love it. In my broadcasting, I love it when I do something that I think is going to give people hope and happiness. I actually like, I don't want to do hard news anymore, really. I like it when I make a piece of radio that's really uplifting. I like that. I want to help people. So yeah, I'm doing this coaching, and hopefully come February, I'll be starting to offer coaching to people. I'm really excited about it.
So can you summarize positive psychology for people who don't know?
I don't know how well I can do it, but it's the idea really that you don't need to be, it's kind of not fixing an illness, if you like. So it's kind of operating from the point of view that, and from a lot of science and a lot of data, that when you take a positive step, or you consume something that makes you feel positive, or you just alter your brain to think positively, it has a dramatic, it actually affects your brain. I mean, it has a big effect on your life. So it's, you know, it's those simple things like writing down what you're grateful for, writing down three things that went well that day. I'm doing that at the moment for a month, just for my own practice. So every day I write down three good things that happened. So it's positive psychology is using positive tools and techniques to help change your behavior and achieve your potential.
But it's celebrating is important, isn't it? So if you do something and you've got to do a little kind of mantra or almost a physical to celebrate your moment, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, even if it's just, I used to laugh and say, you know, we make a big deal out of people who run marathons and half marathons and stuff in our culture. But sometimes I would just be amazed if I did the washing up in the evening. I can remember when the kids were small and things were tough. And if I did the washing up in the evening, it was a massive achievement, and I would always give myself a big pat on the back for it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that's, you should look at the small things in your life and not worry too much about, you know, although I do think having a big scary goal makes a big difference to it, and I believe everyone should set a big scary goal.
We've got a very big scary goal at the Guild of Health in St. Raphael, because we want to help everyone access the positivity, the health and the flourishing that can be found through faith, and our angles through faith in Jesus Christ. And it is huge and it is overwhelming, but I tell you, the only ways we can do it is through connecting with other people. We've got a few team members who are amazing, but it's all about enabling and empowering other people to do that as well. And it's the small stories, Alex. That's why I'm just so pleased to chat with you, because your work with BBC Local Radio, we started this interview, you chatted about those small positive stories. I mean, and the trickle down effect of that, if somebody's having a bad day, but hear something on the radio, it's stories that it's human, small human stories, small human acts of kindness that can genuinely change the world and change our communities one step at a time. And it's connecting it all together. I think the tricky thing is believing in the scale of that. Isn't it? You know, we've been chatting now for maybe half an hour and my phone's on silent, and I've had two devastating bits of news come in on my phone. Just, you know, something in Ukraine, something in Thailand. And you just think, oh, you know, I'm hit by this. I'm trying not to look at my phone because I am listening to you. But I was like, man, that is really tough just to have that impact in a day-to-day life. When I'm also worrying about the washing up. How do you keep the scale of it? There's a tension in that, isn't there? In living in an interconnected, complex, uncertain, unstable world, but only being an individual. That's the tricky thing. But I think that's what we're talking about, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I think that for somebody who works in the news, I limit my access to news. So I make sure I know what's going on, but I don't watch rolling news. I just don't watch rolling news. I don't watch the 10 o'clock news now anymore, because I just need to go to bed and have a good night's sleep. And I'll find out in the morning is my view. And, you know, I think you have to actively boost your positive content. I think you have to actively go and find TED Talks or podcasts or something, so that in your day you are actively consuming something that is positive.
Yeah. So proactive takeaway. Make sure it's like first thing on the to-do list before the washing up and everything is to inject that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And that is positive psychology. That is coaching techniques, which I think is fascinating. I think it's really important to engage with, but it's also our faith inheritance, you know, love the Lord your God with all your strength, your heart, and your mind. And, you know, that is your number one as well to start that this day. It's in the Jewish heritage. It's, you know, we've got it in the Christian heritage too, because we're linked as well. You know, it is, you know, ground zero for positive psychology. Isn't it?
I mean, it is, you know, and the Shema is a prayer that you're supposed to say, like when you go out, when you come in, when you lie down, when you rise up, you know, you're supposed to say it all the time. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. You know, that's simple. Hard, because, you know, even like sometimes I'm like, really? Lord, I love him? What? But what does that mean?
It's also deeply liberating, I find, as well, because we have a need in our society to control everything and to think we're sort of demigods, mini gods in charge of everything, which is fine when things are going well. But when things go badly, then that can have a huge impact on our self-identity and worth. And the faith flip way to deal with it is it says actually everything's of God's. And if things don't work out, it's of God's. God's here anyway, no matter, and full of forgiveness and love and mercy as well. So it's almost a deeply liberating position to take, because we don't have to think that we've got control over everything. This is God's world that we just get to hang out in for a while or join in with as well.
My job has given me access to so many people of faith, you know, and sometimes faith organizations drive me nuts and I disagree with them and, you know, I don't like what they're saying. Church politics always drives me nuts. But I think that it has given me, so I may follow a Jewish tradition, but actually I feel very connected to all the faith traditions that I meet. I sort of feel as if we're all on the same path. Actually, and we're all connected to a very similar power, whatever we call it. You know, I don't know how fashionable or acceptable that is as a viewpoint, but that is very much the position I've come to after 10 years of religious broadcasting.
Alex, thank you so much for coming on the Go Health podcast. I think it's a really positive vision to end on. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing so many tips. We'll try to get as many as possible in the notes from this episode as well. So thank you, Alex. God bless you and everything you're doing. And I look forward to hearing about the faster next half marathon.
Thank you so much, Gillian.
So that was my conversation with Alex. Thank you so much for listening. What did you think? We'd love to know what you thought of the podcast. The podcast is freely available to all, but we pick up the conversation over in the Go Health community. If the themes in today's conversation resonated with you, we'd love to invite you to join our Go Health community. This is where we get together, get resourced, get connected, so that we try to live up to that tagline, together we flourish. Wendy, thank you as ever for producing this podcast. Please rate and subscribe to the Go Health podcast. Why not share it on your social media streams? We'd love as many people as possible to experience these conversations. That would be simply amazing. So in the meantime, God bless. Let's connect and chat, and please join in our vision to help flourish in the world, because together we flourish.